So now it gives me great pleasure to introduce our first speaker today, who is Carolyn Ingram. Carolyn is a senior vice president at the Center for Healthcare Strategies. In this role, she leads the organization's efforts to help state agencies maximize opportunities to improve care and coverage presented under health reform. In particular, her work focuses on assisting states in meeting the needs of the expansion population and developing the interface between Medicaid and the health insurance exchanges. She also oversees the Center for Healthcare Strategies' efforts to enhance the leadership capacity of Medicaid directors and other key Medicaid stakeholders to effectively manage and pursue innovations in publicly financed care delivery. Prior to joining the Center for Healthcare Strategies, Ms. Ingram was the director of New Mexico's Medicaid program from 2003 through 2010. During her tenure, Ms. Ingram made multiple program improvements that resulted in increased utilization of services and greater quality of care, while at the same time containing program cost and ensuring fiscal accountability for the people of New Mexico. Ms. Ingram has a bachelor's degree from the University of Puget Sound, and she's currently pursuing a master's degree in business from New Mexico State University. So without further ado, let me welcome Carolyn Ingram, who will be discussing New Mexico Medicaid, where does it go, what does it do, are children at risk?
All right, thank you very much, and good morning to everyone. And I want to thank Charlotte for all your hard work in putting this together and the Kellogg Foundation for sponsoring us today. It's good to see you here today, and I want to talk just a little bit to folks about where I've moved on to so that you know what I'm doing now. After leaving New Mexico, I joined the Center for Healthcare Strategies. They're a nonprofit based in Princeton, New Jersey. And what we do is we get funding from large foundation groups and go out and assist states for free. Our priorities are around enhancing access to coverage and services, improving quality while reducing racial disparities and ethnic disparities, and integrating care for people with complex and special needs. So a lot of integration around Medicare and Medicaid services for people, and building Medicaid leadership capacity. So today I'm going to talk a little bit about the national Medicaid perspective and what's going on nationally, give you an overview of New Mexico's Medicaid program, and talk a little bit about some opportunities in the program in New Mexico for better management, some of the state budget issues, and the future of the program. And in this discussion, I'm going to try to intertwine our topic of are children at risk and are New Mexico families at risk, along with what the program should do next. And as we go through, there'll be some key pieces that we'll glean from the presentation about whether or not kids are at risk. And I think by the time we get to the end, you'll be able to make your own judgment about the current situation of the Medicaid program here in New Mexico. So a lot is asked of Medicaid. We have some other speakers today that are also going to cover some of these topics, so it's something that we all care a lot about to impress upon people. But we want to make sure that people understand that Medicaid is not only the safety net that covers both maternal and child health, but it really covers a lot of long-term care. It's the entity that covers people in nursing homes. It fills the gap where Medicare doesn't cover people. And it's really become the largest health insurance program in the nation. And I always tell people when I'm training Medicaid leaders that they really need to start thinking about themselves as the biggest CEO of the biggest insurance company in the nation. It really is quite important, the job that they lead, and there's a lot of work they can do around quality of care and driving quality and change in their programs because they are in that position. Here are some fast facts for you about Medicaid. Something that's very interesting, I think, to a lot of people that they don't know, but 41% of all the births in the United States are covered by Medicaid. 27% of the children in the United States are covered by Medicaid. And one of the things that we see not only in these numbers but in other numbers we've got is that Medicaid does serve a lot of the people that are very low-income children, people who are in our income brackets that are also in nursing homes. And I think it's something that people usually think Medicare does. Usually people think Medicare is the one that covers you when you get older, Medicaid's the one that covers low-income people. But really, it's Medicaid that covers both low-income people with disabilities and nursing home residents. So as a lot of you know, Medicaid is very complex and challenging. And no two state Medicaid programs are ever identical. They all have their own state options and plans that they can choose from. In New Mexico, we have about 49 categories of eligibility, so 49 different ways that you can come on to the Medicaid program, and about 50 different types of services in the state. Some of our services require co-payments, so people that are at higher income levels, kids, for example, at higher income levels, adults at higher income levels have to sometimes pay a premium or co-pays to be in the program. And states are allowed to cover other services that are not traditionally done or to waive certain parts of the statute by seeking waivers from the federal government. New Mexico has several different waiver programs, and some of them I'm going to touch on today, but certainly if people have questions, I can go into more detail about them. So here we've listed for you some of the services that are mandatory and optional in New Mexico's program. One key thing to note is that there are no lifetime limits on the benefits, but services can have scope and duration limits. So if you look on the slide, things that fit into the mandatory category, things like inpatient hospitalization, lab and x-ray services, again, the nursing facility services, screening for children. But some of the things that fit right now in the optional program might surprise you. Prescription drugs, for example, is an optional benefit. So the state could choose to not provide that service, but it wouldn't make any sense to have a health insurance program that doesn't offer prescription drugs. So every state offers prescription drugs. But other things that are optional, organ transplants, a lot of the behavioral health services, rehabilitative services, case management, personal care, transportation, those types of services are optional for the state. And so states, choose which benefits they want to provide. This list here lists out what New Mexico has chosen in that area. States are also given the flexibility to cover mandatory and optional populations. And again, on this slide, on the left-hand side, we've listed the mandatory populations. So people that are aged, blind, or disabled, children that are in foster care custody, people that qualify for Medicare in certain ways, Medicaid picks up the cost sharing for those people, and emergency services for undocumented aliens, and that's a federal term. Normally we would refer to people as undocumented immigrants, but that's kind of the list of mandatory services. On the other hand, states are able to expand their Medicaid program into optional categories. So dual Medicaid in New Mexico is really a benefit for adults. It's just given that name because of an eligibility factor, but it's really Medicaid adult eligibility. In New Mexico, we cover kids up to 185% of poverty in our base Medicaid program. SCHIP in New Mexico covers kids then beyond that up to 235% of poverty. And it's a Medicaid add-on to the program. And then you see other programs that New Mexico's chosen, like breast and cervical cancer, and then the waiver programs in New Mexico. So who manages the program in New Mexico? This is often, I think, confusing to legislators and to staff, but there are several different departments that manage the program. The Human Services Department is signified in the state statute as a single state agency delivering the Medicaid services, but they subcontract in a way out to the Department of Health, the Children, Youth, and Families Department, Aging and Long-Term Services, even some pieces to the Public Education Department to run Medicaid. And a lot of that is set up in states because it's a way to, frankly, filter the money, the Medicaid money, and spread it around to run state government. And when we get later into talking about cost containment and what states can do, that's one option for states to look at, is how can they be innovative around using their Medicaid dollars in the best way possible. Another fact that people should know about is that Medicaid enrollees are generally sicker and have more disabling conditions than people with private insurance. And here's a study and some numbers for you by the Kaiser Family Foundation that lists out those factors. The other thing that we know in looking at who's going to come on health insurance when Medicaid expands in the exchange is we know from some preliminary studies done that people, adults that are going to be coming into this expansion program also have more serious conditions and need more care coordination than people you would find in normal private insurance. These next couple of slides are some facts for you about the spending around Medicaid. And I know you have, again, some other speakers who are going to talk about this, so we all do really much care about making sure you know about it because we seem to repeat ourselves. But the top 5% of enrollees that account for more than are those that account for more than half of the Medicaid spending in 2004. And it's really, interesting to see in these charts the comparisons between the enrollment groups and the cost for the population in New Mexico. 60% of the children are enrolled in the program, but their costs are very small, really. It's the disabled population and your elderly population that end up driving your program costs. And this slide came from New Mexico's data. It's the cost of chronic disease in New Mexico, and I just formatted it in a different way, but took it from different reports that they have here in New Mexico. And what you can see from this is different eligibility categories on the left-hand slide, and then the average monthly cost per member for those categories. So you can see that family planning, which is a service New Mexico provides after a woman's delivered, she can have access to contraceptive type pharmaceuticals and other contraceptive type procedures. It's only about $17 per month to cover women in that fashion. And kids that we cover up to 235% of new poverty in New Mexico are only about $200 a month, $203 a month the state spends to take care of those kids. So they're relatively cheap. It's when you get further down in the categories of eligibility, you see the expense coming. So you see under EMSA, which is for emergency medical services, again, to the undocumented immigrants, a lot of that is deliveries and life-saving events for people who are at risk of, are about to die or about to lose a limb. And that's pretty high cost for the state because, again, it's care at the very last minute in an emergency-type situation. And then you see the institutional costs being there, about $4,800 a month for somebody who's in a facility. Usually those are the nursing home population. And then you see the DD waiver there being the most expensive cost for the program. So what does the state do about all these costs? Well, they start looking towards managed care. And New Mexico is very heavy in terms of managed care. And this data that's on this slide shows numbers from 2009. But about 70% of the Medicaid beneficiaries at the time were enrolled in managed care. And what we're starting to see now is the states that are in the 0 to 60%, the seven states there, we're starting to see a lot of them looking towards other managed care options. So California, for example, is looking and moving its what they call their SPD population, but it's their disabled population into managed care. So they've gotten approval for a waiver. They're starting to roll that out across the state there in California. And what does managed care do for people? Well, it takes them from a fragmented care system into an integrated care system. And the other big push that you're seeing nationally right now is a way to do this around people who are dually eligible. So people who are on Medicare and people who are on Medicaid, a way to really integrate that system. New Mexico has a system, the Coordinated Long-Term Care System here, or referred to as CULTS, that starts that process. It makes an accountable home for people. It requires that the managed care companies touch every person to make sure that they get coordinated care as they're going into the system, and helps to align incentives and quality measures around that program. So I think as you'll see through time, you'll see more of these kinds of things popping up. You'll see a lot more changes around the nation in terms of trying to coordinate care for duals. This is just, again, some more facts for you about what happens when unemployment occurs in the nation. We have a 1-point increase in unemployment, and what happens is then your state revenues drop, but at the same time your Medicaid and CHIP enrollment grows. And we've certainly seen that in New Mexico. Vern, I'm going to point out that Vern's going to present that to you, and his facts and his information is really interesting when we get to that point. Set the stage for you. So what percentage of the state's budget goes to Medicaid? 27% of the state's operating budget goes to Medicaid. And when I say operating budget, I mean both the state general fund and the federal matching funds, not just the state money. So that's why that number's so big. Only 11% of the state's general fund is really going to the Medicaid program, because you'll hear people very concerned that, you know, the Medicaid program is just growing and growing and it's eating up the rest of the budget. It's really only 11% of the state general fund budget. But what's starting to happen in New Mexico and all around the nation is we're running into this FMAP cliff, is what I call it. FMAP is the federal matching funds that each state gets from the federal government to match back with state funds to run the Medicaid program. So it's a partnership. Under ARRA, the federal government enhanced that matching fund, and it goes away on June 30th of 2011. So for New Mexico, that's a pretty big drop, and there are some difficulties in terms of managing it that I'm going to talk about in a little bit. But one of the biggest ones is the maintenance of effort under the Health Care Reform Act. It restricts changes in eligibility, so states are left with very few options in terms of how to manage that cliff or that big drop-off. So here are some current budget projections for you around New Mexico. The overall budget for New Mexico is about $3.4 billion. I'm sorry, $3.8 billion. It's down a little bit from what it used to be at its highest peak, and it's projected for fiscal year 11 to be about $3.7 billion. And what I've outlined for you on the slide is just currently what, and I got these numbers from budget facts, but what the projected general fund need would be, and then the amount that the LFC and the DFA recommendations are for each of the budgets. And you can see that there's an additional general fund need of somewhere between $49 million from the DFA recommendation to $60 million from the LFC recommendation. This is just on the program side. This doesn't include the administrative budget to operate the program. The last facts and numbers I looked at for that showed that the department was about $1.4 million underfunded in the admin budget. So in New Mexico, there's a program budget and an admin budget. The program supplies all the money for the direct services. The admin budget is what the department uses to operate the program and run it. So they're short on both sides. They're about $1.4 million short on the admin budget, which means they'll have to go in and cut contracts and possibly cut staff to try to make up that $1.4 million. And then on the other side, they've got quite a large hole. So it doesn't matter which way you go. I know that the legislature really cares about the Medicaid program, and the executive has come out saying they are also trying to help save the Medicaid program. But there's just not enough revenue in the state to do that. So no matter which way you turn, the program's going to be short going into this year. So I want to take a minute there and reflect back on a couple things, because again, our topic today is, are our kids at risk and what does this mean for our kids? And so we've had a couple facts. One, we know kids are cheap to cover. It's only about $200. And the second thing we know is that the budget has a tremendous short for the Medicaid program. So in order to get the whole picture about what that means for kids, we have to look at some of the national health reform opportunities on the horizon. Obviously, with health reform, it's going to be a major expansion to the Medicaid program. It really takes it away from being a program just for low-income people and pregnant women, as people may have seen it, expanding it into a major insurance program for people. And what that means is that there's going to have to be some type of interface with the health insurance exchanges that are coming up. And Laura's going to talk to you about those exchanges and what they mean for New Mexico. But under health reform, there are also some really exciting grant opportunities and demonstration opportunities. There's substantial health insurance reforms, and there's some implementation challenges that Laura's going to talk about today as well. The grant opportunities, I know New Mexico has already applied for some of them, but I'll start to talk a little bit about those. First, before we do that, you can see the funding opportunity for New Mexico. In the 2014, the expansion population will get about 100% federal dollars match. That'll be a lot of money flowing into New Mexico's economy, because we have a lot of people that we haven't expanded the program to, and this is mostly for the adult population up to 138 with the income disregards that will be coming into the program. And that federal matching percentage will go down over time. And the other increase that's going to come for the program is in 2015, we'll be getting 100% match for our SCHIP kids. But there is an impact on the state budgets that hits the state right now, and that's the maintenance of eligibility that we talked about a little bit earlier. But it prohibits the state from changing any current Medicaid eligibility levels and methodologies. If you violate that and you aren't able and you make those changes, then you can lose your state federal funding. It doesn't stop the state from making other changes to the program, so eliminating or reducing optional benefits, establishing enrollment caps for the state coverage insurance program, doing enhanced waste, fraud, and abuse, or reducing provider rates. There is a waiver that's allowed under ACA, under the Federal Health Reform Act, to allow states to ask for a waiver of this maintenance of eligibility, and Arizona has already done that. Laura's going to talk a little bit about that. But it is a possibility for the state to declare an emergency and get a waiver for that. There is going to be funding coming to the state to help build the exchange. This is a way that New Mexico could again get some federal revenue and some federal resources in to help build the infrastructure it needs, and also start to shift some of the money away from some of the debt that it's going to have. So you remember back when I said the administrative budget under Medicaid is short, about $1.4 million. And part of what they need inside Medicaid to bring up health reform is a new eligibility system. Well, now you can get 90% funding for the pieces of that eligibility system. And so it's a great way for the state to build what it needed in terms of a replacement system for what we call here our ISD-2 system, which is an old, very old, antiquated eligibility system. It's a way to get 90% match to rebuild that system. Medicaid's link to the exchange is going to be critical in order to make sure that kids and families don't fall through the cracks. And we know from some recent literature that just came out that there's going to be a big churn between people who are in the Medicaid program going up into the exchange to get benefits and then going back down. So if you think about it in terms of rooms that people might be moving through, you'll have new people coming in. They might be eligible for the base Medicaid program. The family, the adults get a job. They then move up into maybe the expansion population because they came in maybe as cooks or something or dishwashers into a small business. They get promoted up into that. They eventually move up into the exchange to purchase insurance, so they move into a different room. But then something happens, a crisis happens in their life, and they move back down through the room. So there's got to be what's very consumer-centric, a no-wrong-door type approach to building this exchange in New Mexico to make sure that our families are not at risk for falling through the cracks to get the coverage they need. New Mexico has a program that has already done a lot of this, the State Coverage Insurance Program. It's created a valuable platform to look at the future of the exchange and how to build and to work off of it. Unfortunately, New Mexico's SCI program is one of those programs that is ripe for cutting because it's funded in part by SCHIP dollars, and there's no restriction to cutting eligibility around those funds. There are going to be some other financing opportunities around health reform, and a lot of the reform will focus on things like medical homes. There's an opportunity to get 90% matching funds for that for 2 years. There's going to be grants coming out around accountable care organizations and doing bundled payments around episodes of care. So again, another way the state can take advantage of health reform and get some more money coming into the state. There's also some new federal entities focusing on innovation. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation Office has already come out with a grant around duals that New Mexico did apply for, and it's about $1 million, and hopefully New Mexico will get selected, and that's $1 million that can come to the state for infrastructure. There's some other opportunities there that are going to help increase primary care payments. There's new drug rebates that the states are going to get some credit back for that will help New Mexico, and some other long-term care options. So what does this all mean for the future of the program and for our kids and our families who are at risk? I mean, first, we know kids are cheap to cover, and we know that there's some protections in the law around maintenance of eligibility. So we know that for kids, there's some ways that they're protected from this cost containment that's about to come. But we know that the state has no choice but to do some cost containment. They need to look at integrating long-term care in a better fashion. They need to start looking at payment reforms and some of the bundled payment ideas that are out there that are going to be coming down the pike. And they're going to have to probably look at a benefit structure redesign. It may be that not everybody's going to be able to keep getting the same benefit package in New Mexico that they've always received. The other opportunities, though, on the horizon for our families and for our kids are the opportunities coming around health reform, the integration of long-term care, health homes, some payment changes. And so I think you know, while we say the states may be hanging on by their fingertips during this period of time because the cliff is about to happen and they're about to fall off this FMAP cliff and they're hanging on as much as they can, there is hope on the future with the health reform coming, and I think there are some opportunities there for states. So with that, I'm going to leave you with some resources that you can, lots of different websites that you can go back and look up information on if you need to get further facts. The Kaiser Family Foundation, Academy for State Health, NGA, CMS websites, NCSL also has good websites with this information. Or you can visit chcs.org and get information from there. We also have a lot of reports and data and great information on these things at that website. So thank you.